Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Peter Flanagan, and my happy task is to introduce our distinguished speaker on vouchers. So it takes very considerable courage to be out in front with new ideas. But it takes even greater courage, many orders of magnitude greater, for a candidate for public office and then a holder of public office to campaign on and fight for ideas that are not yet espoused by a majority of the voters. Yet that is exactly what candidate Jeb Bush and then Governor Jeb Bush did. The polls showed that during last year's gubernatorial election, the majority of Floridians did not believe that vouchers for children in failing public schools were appropriate. Yet candidate Bush, faithful to his own thoughtful convictions and to the principle that he owed it to the voters to tell them what he believed, had vouchers as a very important plank in his platform. Now, I'm sure that many of his political advisors said that he should soft pedal that idea, that the time wasn't ripe, and he rejected that advice. Well, apparently, Floridians were more impressed with candidate Bush's courage than distressed by his ideas on bringing competition to public education. So they handily elected him as their governor. Now, what would most newly elected governors do? They'd put forward as their first piece of legislation the one that was popular with the voters and popular with the legislature. And needless to say, that would easily pass. Then they might even indefinitely delay proposing the more contentious things on which they ran. But not our Governor Bush. Upon being sworn into office, his first legislative proposal was his education proposal, including vouchers for children from failing public schools. Many members of his legislature shared neither his conviction nor his courage. So Governor Bush went to work to change enough minds to win. He would either start his first term with a victory for his great idea or go down fighting. He rallied support from all across Florida and indeed from all across America. He orchestrated public support on the steps of his Capitol and private support in the halls of his Capitol. And as we all know, he did win. Now, I could go on and tell you about how he came to Florida two decades ago, founded a real estate firm that became one of the largest in the area, served as Florida's Secretary of Commerce, and then lost a squeaker 5 years ago in his first race for governor. But you and I are here to hear about Governor Bush's groundbreaking new vision for education. And for this profile in courage, this great step in the battle for our children, we are all deeply in his debt. I give you Governor Jeb Bush.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter, and it is a real honor for me to be here. I'm just a country boy from Florida and in front of the Manhattan Institute. You know, first of all, I want to give my thanks to Peter Flanagan for being a pioneer in this whole issue of giving power to parents that don't have it, to allow them to make choices for their children and then get engaged to make their lives better. Happened to be governor in the right state at the right time with the right legislature, but there are a lot of people around the country that have been advocating this with some frustration, probably, but advocating this strongly and forcefully, and Peter Flanagan is at the top of the list. So it is an honor to be introduced by you, and you deserve a round of applause for all the things that you've been doing. This is my second trip to New York as governor of the state of Florida, and the hospitality in New York City gets a little better each time I come. About a month ago, month and a half ago, I came for an event for Mayor Giuliani and his non-campaign, I guess, for the United States Senate, and I told the cab driver that I was going to Manhattan to attend this fundraiser, I believe, at the Sheraton, and he dropped me off in Brooklyn. So this time I didn't take a cab. I don't know if the cabbies are still in love with your mayor, but it is great to be here and be here on time. There are some things different about our plan and its how it passed, and what I'd like to do is kind of go through it and then maybe have a chance where we can have a lot of questions and comments rather than hopefully it won't be a long-winded speech. But the main focus of our efforts wasn't related to how are we going to get the teachers union or even about parental choice, to be honest with you. There are a lot of people that morally believe it is morally right for parents to be given the power to choose where their children should go to school. I do too. But the whole focus of our efforts related to something that everybody in our state agrees is important that we focus on, which is student achievement. Student achievement is what the A-plus plan is about, focusing on the fact that children need to gain a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time, and incrementally over 12 years, they'll gain 12 years' worth of knowledge in 12 years' time, and they'll be able to close their eyes and dream about being anything they want to be. It's really that simple. And for far too long, public education in general, has not been focused on student achievement. It's been focused on the adults all around our children. People from the outside all upset that the people on the inside don't get it, and all the people on the inside building fortresses to protect the system rather than focus on student achievement. Well, in our state and in almost every state in the country, we need to focus on student achievement. In our state, more than half of the children in fourth grade read below basic level. They're reading below fourth grade level. And no one would argue the fact that by the time you're in fourth grade, when you have to start acquiring knowledge, if you haven't gained the skills to read and write and calculate math, you're not going to do it. You're going to begin to fall behind. In our state, 60% of the young people that go to community colleges, and we have one of the best community college systems in the country, 60% take remedial coursework. They're retaking high school English and math, algebra, because they didn't get it right the first time. In our state, 52% of the students don't graduate from high school. 52% of Florida's students do not graduate from high school. Now, I don't know about you, but that breaks my heart, because every study shows that if you don't have a high school degree, your income aspirations are going to be, your aspirations may be high, but the chances of achieving those will be low. The drains and strains on a society that does not have the ability to educate its young people become so apparent. I wish you would have followed me in my campaign to go to the family law courts or to the prisons or to the dependency courts, the delinquency courts. One of the common denominators of this enormous breakdown of society, one family at a time, was the lack of education in many of the people that were in this very god-awful situation. Anybody in the dependency court will tell you that. Anybody in the delinquency court will tell you that. 75% of our prisoners, of the 65,000 prisoners in our state, cannot read at eighth grade level. On and on and on it goes, and yet the fight is not about student achievement, it's about the system. Well, in Florida today, we've moved to a child-centered system, and I'd like to describe it to you a little bit because I'm quite proud of the Florida legislature having the courage to go along with this. We started with three basic premises. One, more accountability was essential. There is no possible way you can build a new system unless it is accountable to everybody. Secondly, that we would have zero tolerance for failure. No more social promotion. No more excuses about society's influence on our kids. Instead of saying that poverty levels or family structure or race or nationality was the key factor in whether a child learned or not, we're going to put that aside and say, this state is not going to tolerate failure anymore. And thirdly, we would be child-centered, as I said, instead of system-driven and system-focused. That led, those three guiding principles led to a plan that starts with the premise that we would qualitatively or quantitatively measure each child's performance. As you know, most places what they have is a norm reference test. So you get a test back and little Johnny may be in the 26th percentile. That doesn't mean necessarily that little Johnny has learned anything, or maybe it means little Johnny's learned a lot. All it means, all it shows is where Johnny is relative to the rest of the kids across the nation that took that very test. Well, in Florida today, we've changed that. We started with the premise that every child can learn, and we ought to focus on their achievement. So from grades 3 through 10, based on the Sunshine Skills Standards, every child is tested, and we measure how they did compared to themselves. We start with their base of the previous year, and we go for a year of going to school, and we see if they've gained a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time. Pretty radical idea, apparently, in the United States of America. But with rigorous high standards, and then assessing those standards by a child being focused, measured on the standard rather than on other children, we've begun the process of building this new child-centered system. Secondly, we moved, as I said, away from the norm reference to the standardized, but we also then said something quite radical, apparently, again, and it surprises me how these things just, why people were so opposed to it, or why they thought the world was going to come to an end, but we said every school will then be graded on student achievement. And if the focus was a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time, we're going to grade schools on whether students were achieving a year's growth in that time. And so now in Florida, every school is graded A through F. Now the politically correct said, no, you should have different kind of grading system. It should be 1 through 5, or it should be satisfactory and use terms to describe this and never come to the fact that we have failure. Never use the word F or the letter F because that connotes failure. Well, we didn't do that. In Florida today, we have a grading system where 79 schools are rated F, some 300 schools are rated D, and a lot of schools are rated C, very few are rated D and A. It's a wake-up call in our state, and it's based on student achievement. That's the second step, is to begin to grade how schools do based on not the circumstances that the children bring to school, but the circumstances of what goes on in that classroom. Thirdly, we rewarded educational success, which was based on improvement. Every child, every school in Florida will get $100 per student if their grade goes up or if they're an A-rated school. Another wacky idea in 1999 in America, we actually reward success. And if you're an F-rated school and you go to a D, you get $100 per child. For 1,000 kids in a middle school, that's a lot of money. No strings attached on how that money could be spent. The principal and the school advisory committees, it's comprised of majority of parents, decide how that money is spent. And if you continue to show progress, you continue to get additional monies. Fourth, as we raised expectations for every child, we also eliminated social promotion. And I mean eliminated social promotion. A lot of states have talked about this, but in our state, we have done it. Now, the idea, the argument against social promotion or for social promotion is the self-esteem of Johnny is important.
Is it working?
And Mr. Strassel is an expert on self-esteem. I've seen it on 2020, and self-esteem is real important. But learning a year's worth of knowledge, learning to read, and learning to write, and learning to calculate math is a whole lot more important for little
Johnny.
You got
signal?
And in the end, little Johnny's self-esteem is going to be far better off if they gain that power of knowledge. So we've eliminated it, not in certain circumstances. We've eliminated it.
You hear, right?
The idea isn't to have 15-year-old kids in third grade. The idea is to have a third grader have the remedial help that is necessary for them to gain a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time. And we put our money where our mouth was, $527 million in a pool of money where the schools can do whatever they want, but they have to organize themselves around these kids and not let them get so far behind.
You got two mics to work.
It broke my heart to go to high schools where ninth graders were reading at fourth grade level. How could we as a society allow that to happen? Isn't it far better to start in the fourth grade and say enough of this nonsense? We're going to make sure that kids learn a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time before it's too late. Well, in Florida today, we've begun that process, and the whole world has changed. And it's exciting to see the people in the system now begin to change their priorities to make sure that it does happen. And then we said, and this is the part that got everybody's attention, that if a school is F-rated for 2 years out of four, that the parents in that school, that would be defined as failure. Call it Chapter 11, if you will. And the parents in those schools would be given other options. First, they would be given the option of a newly reinvigorated school on that same premise, on that same campus. Secondly, they could go to any public school in the county of their choice. And third, they could go to a private school, religious or non-religious, so long as the private schools took all comers. They accepted the scholarship amount, the opportunity scholarship amount, which y'all call vouchers. I trained everybody that was involved in this to call them opportunity scholarships because I do believe that that defines what this is about far better. That they would take the voucher amount or scholarship amount as the full amount, and that they would test the children with the same test. And that was it. Those were the only requirements that the eventual bill allowed. Well, you would think that World War III had been created by the inclusion of that in our plan, and that, in fact, is exactly the catalyst that is necessary to transform our public schools. And it will work, because now, all across the state of Florida, public school administrators who have neglected the kids that have been trapped in these failing schools now are refocusing their efforts in ways that would defy your imagination. And it's so exciting to see. Starting in 3 weeks, in two inner-city schools in Pensacola, roughly 60 parents will have been afforded an opportunity scholarship, and they'll go to a Montessori school or four Catholic schools that have opted into our plan. But at the same premise, the same location of those two failed schools, a veritable revolution is taking place. In those schools, they had to come to the cabinet to get approval for their new plans. The principal in those two schools are the only schools, the traditional public schools in the entire state of Florida, that can hire any teacher they want and can transfer any teacher out of their school. There's a waiver of the collective bargaining agreement to allow that to happen. In those two schools, the mobility problem, which is a huge problem in inner city schools all across the state, where kids move because their parents have to find another place to live or make it another job, they move back and forth. It's hard to teach kids if they're moving to three schools during the year. In those two schools, the public school system will provide the transportation to ensure that they stay there a year so that they can get a year's worth of knowledge in a year's time. In those two schools, there's an extended school year from 180 days to 210 days. They require parents to be able to have parent-teacher conferences every 6 weeks. Before, there were no conferences required at all. And on and on and on it goes. The focus is to improve those schools. And the only reason that that exists is because parents were given other choices. Were it not for the fact that parents were given opportunity scholarships, I know you understand this very well, there would have been no change. Well, we are having a renaissance in public education in Florida because this governor and the Florida legislature trusted parents to make choices for their children. And it is an incredible delight to see how this process works. Now, the opponents of opportunity scholarships say that we're going to take money away from public schools. And if you ever get into a position where you have a chance to do this, if anybody here is a governor and they have a legislature they need to go convince, I would suggest you do it at a time when there is abundance and where you can make a legitimate case that public education deserves additional funding. No one in Florida will believe that we're taking money out of public schools when there is a $1.4 billion increase in public education, a 7% increase. There are 40,000 kids that will be coming to the public school system each year. There will never be 40,000 kids in Florida that will be given an opportunity scholarship in any year. Public education will remain. It just has to change to become much more viable and improved so that we can ensure that children aren't left behind. The other argument is the kids that remain in the school will be in schools of such low quality, and only the interested parents, the concerned parents, will take their children out. Well, once again, what we have found is the exact opposite is the case, that we're going to have improved public education in those failed schools, because just as in business when there's Chapter 11 and there's reorganization, those schools end up significantly, that business ends up coming out of bankruptcy and with a much more dynamic business plan to be able to meet the needs, in many cases, of their customers, and they can be viable. The same will apply in Pensacola, Florida, and across this state when these schools have to be reorganized. Finally, I will tell you that probably the most exciting part of this was to be able to take this as a candidate. I learned something from my brother, who in 1994 got elected, and he said he was going to do these four things, and then he went and did the four things, and people in Texas were like amazed. Here's a guy who actually said, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, went to the legislature, convinced them, and he did it. In politics today, I think it's important to say what you're going to do, and then do what you said you were going to do. It's a pretty simple concept that far too few elected officials remember once they get elected. Well, it was fun to advocate this during the campaign, and it became the number one issue in the campaign. An exit poll showed that our side won the education debate as a Republican candidate with a pretty provocative plan of action to improve public schools. We won the debate, and it gave me, I believe, the mandate to go then implement that idea through the legislature and now in every nook and cranny of our state. That was exciting. But the most exciting part of this was when we did the bill signing, and I had the chance to be with three parents from Pensacola, Florida. By the way, the schools that are failing are 99% African American. Their kids go the schools that aren't working, 99% African American, 95% of the kids are qualified for a full school lunch program. This is not some kind of elitist plot, I can assure you. When we had the chance to sign the bill, and Demikra Williams was there with her precious daughter, Jessica. Now, here's a little five-year-old girl dressed up beautifully, and she had been working. It was a long trip to get to Pensacola. That's like half, when you get to Tallahassee, you're like halfway through the state. The western side of the state's far longer than I think they probably imagined. They left at 4 in the morning. They got there for our press conference, and little Jessica, she put her arms out, so I grabbed her while some other people were talking, and she fell asleep on my shoulder. And afterwards, so I'm holding this beautiful girl while this whole thing's going on, and afterwards her mom said, you know, Jessica told me when we were driving over here this morning that she wanted to be a pediatrician. Here's a five-year-old girl that has closed her eyes and dreamed about something far better than what people would give her credit for, because we build up all these stereotypes about people. We set the, you know, and it's natural, I think, humans do this regularly, but we say, oh, no, it can't be done. Children, you know, from certain income levels or certain family structures can't dream that they can be a pediatrician starting in fifth grade. And her mom wanted that child to get the very best possible education. And I believe because of our legislation, there'll be thousands of Mrs. Williams out there now that will be given that chance, and they are the ones that will make this a catalyst for change across the country. It won't be the politicians. It'll be the moms and the dads that sense that their children are trapped in failed schools and want the very best for them, that they've shattered that ugly stereotype that somehow, some way, they don't care as much about their children as kids who happen to have parents that live in the suburbs. I'm excited about being a small part of that, but I'm more excited about being a part of something where little Jessica will be able to pursue her dream and be a pediatrician. We need a few in our state, and she will be a fantastic one because she's going to get a world-class education. Thank you all very much.
Time for a few questions, so if you just raise your hand, we'll get some hand mics to you. Okay?
Yes. I can do this.
Barry?
Yes, ma'am.
There's a mic.
I'll repeat it. So. No. No. This is, our plan is based on schools not providing a quality education, and not just that, that have chronically failed. To get on the F-rated list, you have to have two-thirds of your kids be below grade level in reading, math, and writing, or all three. That's how you get on the F, that's how you become F-rated. So every child in that school will be afforded an opportunity scholarship or the chance to seek other options. And so it is not income-based, it's not at-risk-based, and all the language that now we throw around when we talk about kids. It is based on schools not performing. And my belief is that what you're going to see is that the schools that have a predominant number of kids in the lower performing category are going to see dramatic improvement. And I want to see how this works before we begin to change anything about this plan. Yes.
Well, my question is a follow-up. Would you envision giving the same benefit to those students in the D schools or in the C schools so they too could have the choice for a better school? Or must they languish at that D level or C minus level?
Well, again, they're not going to languish because a D and F rated schools already, in the initial inception of this, what we're seeing is a refocus of resources and priorities by school districts towards these schools that have been allowed to languish. So my belief is that you're going to see continuous improvement, particularly in the lower grades. And if, you know, we're just starting. We're on brand new turf here. I have no idea what we'll be doing in a couple of years, but my initial reaction is that we're going to see the kind of improvement that I think will put Florida way ahead of the rest of the country. Yes, sir.
Governor, I'm wondering if you could give us an idea of what impact your educational reforms will have on bilingual education.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't know what impact they'll have. I do know that some of the schools that have tested quite low are schools that have a disproportionate number of migrant students in them that truly need immersion. But right now, you do not. If your English is a second language, you are tested. But if you are totally monolingual, you don't speak English at all, you're not tested. You're tested, but you're not tested for purposes of grading the schools. And so it won't have necessarily an impact, although I think we have we ought to make it a priority to move people through the bilingual education programs as quickly as possible through total immersion and other techniques to get kids into the mainstream classes. And Florida leads is very different than California in that regard, that has this two-track system that I think is basically creates a second-class citizenry for a lot of the immigrants to come to our country. We do not have that philosophy, so we're not in nearly as bad shape. Yes, sir. Yep. Yeah, you're it. Oh, you're looking for a mic.
I want to ask about the disconnect between the black parents who support vouchers and the black civil rights leadership establishment. Who do not support vouchers and who argue that the masses of the children will be trapped in failing schools and left behind as you create a few opportunities for a few privileged children, privileged in the sense they can get out of the system.
Yeah.
And my question is, what evidence do you have that the choice schools, the option, the opting out, the voucher system, in effect creates pressure on the public school system to change and to reform? And what evidence will you need before you believe that the, 79 schools F schools and 300 schools that are D, that's a massive problem. What evidence will you need that the changes in the public school system are happening fast enough to justify the experiment? And what will happen if it doesn't happen fast enough? When will you start closing schools or reforming them?
Well, first of all, the impact will be evident when this, I mentioned the social promotion pool of money, which took all of these categorical programs, the dropout prevention program, the after-school program, the at-risk program, they have all these different things for specified groups of students. We put it in one big pool and said, here's a pot of money. If you figured out that a kid is in second grade and is reading at first grade level, stop what you do, develop a new strategy, get tutors to come in, like they do in Milwaukee now, where the superintendent of the Milwaukee public school system gives to every parent a guarantee, a warranty, if you will, that if you make sure your kid goes to school 90% of the time, by third grade, I think it is, if they're not reading at third grade level, we're going to give you a private tutor to ensure that they do. And so these are the new strategies that will be developed with the money that the state is going to provide to ensure that kids aren't left behind. And the schools then, their performance will see improvement. We'll see that evidence in the next couple of years. We'll see the benefits of refocusing our efforts in the areas where the schools have lagged the most. We'll also see it, I think, when there's an outpouring of support by parents to want to have another option. I mean, after all, who is the best person to determine their child's education than a parent? The stereotypical notion is that some parents aren't prepared to make that choice or aren't capable of making that choice. I have found the exact opposite to be the case. And as the first evidence right here, I mean, in Pensacola, we've had many more people that want to take advantage of the Opportunity Scholarship than there are spaces available. In Florida, we also participated in the Children's Scholarship Fund, I think it's called, where thousands of people, like 25,000 people in Miami, families showed up to be able to get a private scholarship that accomplishes the same thing. That's proof that when you give parents choices that it works. I mean, if they were satisfied, they would stay in the schools that their kids are in now, wouldn't they? And so I'm confident that we'll be able to prove that this works because it is so commonsensical and so focused on the things that we know work in our everyday lives. Why is public education exempt from common sense? That's the question. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Oh. A follow-up to that question?
Yeah.
You talked about the fact that failing schools are given the opportunity to get rid of their lemon teacher time, failing principals. Wouldn't you suggest that if we work in political fights, provide all schools?
Yes, it would.
Governor Bush? Governor Bush?
Yes, it would. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Governor Bush, I wholeheartedly support your voucher program, but I question the wisdom of charter schools, which create yet another educational bureaucracy of schools that may or may not work. I think the common sense approach is to give parents vouchers so that they can send their children to schools that do work, the approach that you have in Florida. Would you comment on the voucher versus charter school approach?
Well, I can only comment on charter schools as it relates to the Florida experience, and I have to disclose the fact that I set up the first independent public school or charter school in the state with the Urban League of Greater Miami, who, by the way, is supportive of the A-plus plan and the opportunity scholarships. I didn't mention, but we were sued, as you might expect, the very same day that we passed the bill by all the likely suspects, I guess. The ACLU, the People for the American Way, I think the League of Women Voters, I may be wrong about that, but the NAACP, I was disappointed in that. They sued and a couple other groups. Not one parent of one of the kids in the two schools that were failing were part of the lawsuit. It's kind of interesting. And so when the question was asked by a very able reporter to the group of the likely suspects assembled when they announced their lawsuit, would you send your kids to that school? Total silence. Total silence. So I forgot to mention that in the speech, but charter schools are a viable option. They're public schools in every way. I don't know how they're being organized here in New York, but in our case, They're independent public schools that are focused on a contractual obligation to do something different and to focus on results. And so we, in our school, we had a contract of 7 criteria with the Dade County Public School System, and reading and math were part of that. Also, parental involvement and attendance were factors, but mostly it was related to achievement. And I don't have any problems with that. In our state where we've had some problems is that there had not been as much vigilance about capitalization of these schools. And you should make sure that they're run in a business-like way. The traditional public schools have this enormous bureaucracy around them that handle the purchasing and the accounting and all this. And if you're undercapitalized and you're starting out a venture and you're focused on children learning and you let that languish, you end up having problems down the road. And so we've had a few schools that have had that problem, but that can be rectified. I mean, you can legislate that to ensure that the dynamic element of new schools that are public in nature exist as well. I mean, my vision for this is that 10 years from now, parents will be given a whole menu of options that allow them to make more choices and have a much more dynamic child-centered system, and charter schools can play a pretty legitimate role in that regard, in my opinion. Yes?
Governor Bush, the regime of racial preferences is bankrupt in the school system. Far from easing racial tensions, it exacerbates it, and far from helping its alleged beneficiaries, it casts a stigma on the legitimate accomplishments of minorities and in many instances thrusts students into environments for which they're not prepared. Are you prepared to support Ward Connerly's crusade to try and free the state from racial preferences? And if not, when are you willing to declare the people of Florida bias-free enough that they can live in a colorblind society?
I'm not prepared to do that today because we do have, I'm answering the second question first. The answer to the first question is no. I'm not going to participate in a very divisive initiative process that will bring a lot more heat than light. I respect Ward Connerly, but I told him that I was not going to participate in that. I saw what happened in California in these initiatives what happens, you have armed camps, armed political, with political language, not with arms, but you have a lot of arguing and not much accomplished. My belief is that where there are overt cases of set-asides and quotas, it's my responsibility to change it if I oppose it, which I do, which I will. But today I cannot honestly tell you that we have a true colorblind society in Florida. As it relates to university admissions, we need to change that as well in some fashion. But to suggest that a possible initiative, and that's all it is right now, is the answer to this when it can be done by leadership in our own state is, I think, the wrong way to go. So I told him that. He was upset about it. I respect him enormously, but in our state, at least this governor is not going to participate in it. And I also told him one other thing. I told him that I wanted to cut $1 billion of taxes in our state, the first and largest tax cut in our state's history. I told him I wanted to have civil service or the tort reform. Civil service reform may happen a little later. I told him that I wanted to take the tobacco monies and not let them be frittered away, but put in an endowment so that we could take care of the truly needy in our state. And more importantly than all that, I wanted to reform our public education system. And that these were my priorities. This is what I said I would do as governor, and I wanted to be true to my word. And, there is a limit to what you can expend your capital on. And I want to expend it on positive things that will help people in my state. And I think he appreciated that and understood it, but didn't like the answer that I gave him.
We have time for one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
I understand that a number of private schools, particularly Jewish day schools, because of the church-state division, are opting out of your plan. Can you comment on the kind of schools that are the kind of private schools that are involved, and what you're going to do about certain schools not being involved, maybe the elite schools?
Well, right now the only place where the private option is available is in Pensacola, Florida, and I don't believe that there are any Jewish day schools in Pensacola. There may be, but they may have opted out. But the schools that have in Pensacola that have opted out. There is a very large Christian school that was concerned about the incursion of the government into their affairs, and that was a legitimate reason to be concerned. Four of the five parochial Catholic schools have opted in. The one that I'm aware of, one Montessori school, has opted in, and another non-religious private school has opted in. So there are enough choices to get this off the ground. As we move to other parts of the state, there may be other schools for reasons of making sure that their basic mission is protected. And I'm one of the things that we found in the legislature was that the opponents to this tried to pass literally 100 amendments to add regulatory burdens on private schools so that no private school would opt in. And through the conference committee, we got most of those taken out. And the idea is not to impose public school rules on private schools. The idea ought to be to do the opposite, which is to move to a performance-oriented public school system that looks more like the best private schools that exist. And as we do that, I think you'll find that private schools' fears will subside and they will opt into this. Plus, I'm hoping that some of you guys are going to come down. And if you're excited about making sure to prove the notion that every child can learn, put your money where your mouth is and do something that's rewarding and sign up with some great education entrepreneurs that are already in the public school system and build private schools. There are people waiting for you to come down to prove this notion with us. So sign up. Become a gladiator.
Thank you,
guys. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.